Hello, everyone. Dennis Prager here with Fireside Chat number
327.
327. I got a call from a very dear friend who lives in New York City. And I was a bit surprised because it was pretty late here, which meant that it was 3 hours later. I live in California. And it was 3 hours later in New York. So he was calling at about 1 a.m. his time. I'm always up at 1 a.m. my time, but I love the night. And he goes to bed at normal times. So I go, is everything okay? He goes, yeah, that's why I'm calling. I go, what are you talking about? Is everything okay with you, Dennis? So I was thinking, is everything okay with me? And I was thinking, what did he possibly hear? My life is quite blessed. He goes, I'm watching the news, and I see these horrible storms in California. How are those rains affecting you? So I thought for a moment, and I said, it's raining. That's it. That's all it's doing. It's raining. He goes, oh, I'm watching these things and I'm seeing these horrible storms. I'm seeing cars in water. And so let me just reflect on that for a moment, because this is a very long-standing theme in my life. How people are affected by media in bad ways. I tell the story. I wrote a book. I'm jumping here. Forgive me. I wrote a book in the 1990s called Think a Second Time. It contains 44 essays that I wrote on 44 subjects. It's a really good introduction to my thinking about life, because it's about all different subjects: religion, happiness, politics, everything. So one of them, it is about the impact of media. And this is really a while ago. So we're talking now 25 years ago. So I tell the story. It made such an impact on me. I was in New York City, and I broadcast from my New York station, and then I headed on that day to a speech I was to give that evening in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, which is right over the border from Philadelphia. So went to bed. I don't remember if I even was aware of this. I woke up in the morning. I saw that it was, light snow, a couple of inches of snow on the ground. I grew up in New York. I'm totally used to snow, and a couple of inches means nothing. I turn on the radio, and station after station is warning people, don't drive unless it's an emergency. And it will be a disaster on the roads. If you must drive, go hours early. And I remember entering that famous state of mind called cognitive dissonance. On the one hand, there was the radio, and on the other hand, I looked out my window. Cars were driving. Everything seemed normal, except it was snowing. Wasn't blizzard snowing, just snowing. But I was influenced by the radio report, and I left early. And I thought my trip to Cherry Hill, basically Philadelphia from Manhattan, would take me at least 4 hours. Anyway, I got on the New Jersey Turnpike, and there were no cars. And the road was basically clear. I got to Cherry Hill in record time, because I had gone to Philadelphia from New York many times. And I remember I thought, wow, everybody got so influenced by the reports. They avoided driving, and I had the New Jersey Turnpike to myself. So I went to a bookstore. Some of you may have never seen a bookstore, but at that time they were still many bookstores. So I went to a bookstore in Cherry Hill. It was empty. I was the only customer. And I said to the woman who ran the bookstore, I said, how come is this normal for there be no customers? And she said, no, not at all. But people watch the news or listen to the news, and then I'll never forget, she opened my eyes. She said, they are more influenced by what they hear and see in the media than they are by their own reality. And that was a brilliant insight on the part of this woman who ran a bookstore in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, 25 years ago. The media are more powerful than your own lived experience. The media told Americans that it was best to close schools. So they closed schools, and it was terrible damage to a generation of children, as people like myself warned the entire time. The reality was, my kid is being damaged, sitting home for 2 years. This is really terrible. Learning nothing, just on playing video games or on social media all day long. No interaction with other kids, but I'm told this is good for my child. But that's what they were told, so that's what most parents believed. Happily, I didn't believe it, but I was in a very small minority. I wrote in April, you could see it on the internet, April 2020, that the lockdowns were the greatest mistake, greatest international mistake in history. Turns out I was right. But people were told, the media told them, listen, media tell kids that they could become a boy or a girl if they're already a girl or a boy. People believe what they're told. The power of the media. I'm using the example of my friend being panicked by what's happening to me in California, when nothing is happening to me, but it correlates to almost anything in life. People believe what they're told more than their experienced reality. Nobody really believes a boy could become a girl. But if you're told it, all of a sudden it becomes a possibility. I don't know what this is in the human condition that enables people to believe what runs totally counter to their own experience. I saw that there was no snow to worry about, but the media told people there's a lot of snow to worry about, and so people stayed home. And I had a clear drive on a Friday afternoon, the busiest time on highways, down to Philadelphia. I have thought about this a great deal, the power of media on people. Believe me, I'm not the only one to think about this. But it is amazing that people have so little trust in their own perceptions. I think that's a big factor here. I mean, as the woman said to me in the bookstore, people looked out the window, at their own window, of their own home. So nothing was happening, but they still believe the media. And that's really what it is. If you're told something by the government or by the media, or in our case in America at this time, both, because they're basically one and the same, the government and the media at this moment. I hope it changes, but it is what it is. People will believe it. I don't know why. It's the ease with which people can believe things that are directly contrary to their own experience. For here's another one. People are told today that to be colorblind is to be racist. This is commonly told in colleges and high schools, maybe even elementary schools. Isn't it obvious that that's contrary to all logic? If I don't notice your color, how could I be racist? Isn't racism dependent upon taking color seriously? And yet, I would say half of young Americans believe that the word colorblind is racist. The coach of the New England Patriots, did I review that?
You did, yes.
Yeah, I thought so. But it doesn't matter. It's just, I wanted to note, you can watch a previous addressing this issue at length. The coach of a major football team, a professional football team in the United States, said, if you don't notice race, that's racism. The man said something that is completely illogical. Forget not truthful, just illogical. So it's no wonder that my friend called me. He believed what he saw in the media. And I was tempted to say to him, I remember something, this was fascinating. One more example of the power of perceptions. So in my 20s, I would visit Israel quite frequently. I've been there over 20 times. And I remember people would say to me, I was then, until the age of 25, I was living in New York City. And I remember people in New York City saying to me, wow, you're going to Israel, isn't it dangerous? And I thought, why do you think it's dangerous? Oh, there are these terror attacks that take place all the time. And I realized that because the only time Israel was in the news was when there was a terror attack, they thought it was happening all the time and all over the place. Whereas there's no country I have felt safer in. I've felt equally safe, I don't know, in Norway, but no country that I have felt safer in than Israel in all my trips to Israel. But here's the punchline. So when I was in Israel that very same summer, some Israeli said to me, where are you from? I speak Hebrew, we were talking in Hebrew, but it was obvious that I was not Israeli. I don't have an Israeli accent. And he says, so where are you from? I go, from America. Oh, where in America? I go, New York City. New York City? Aren't people murdered there every day? How do you walk the streets? So the Israeli couldn't believe I was in New York. The New Yorkers couldn't believe I was in Israel. Now, there is a lot of crime, and there was then in New York City, but it's not like everybody's being shot all day. But the only time they saw New York in the news was when there was a murder or multiple murders. So this is really good examples of the power, which seems to be unlimited, of the media to influence people to believe anything, including colorblind is racist. Or, yeah, it's snowing out and you better not drive. You look outside and it looks fine and you won't drive. It's very important to think for yourself. It's really important. Okay, there you go. I had a completely different idea till 5 minutes before the broadcast. And then Reed mentioned it, my stepson, and it was a very important point, especially given my friend's phone call from last night. All right, let's take it away. Uh-oh. Okay.
Hi, Dennis. My name is Joshua. I'm from Wrightwood, California, and I was wondering if you could have anyone in the world on your show, who would it be?
That is a very interesting question. So I realized, so one of the obvious answers, people would think some major political figure, a president, a prime minister, the Pope, all right, those are obvious. Or if they're into pop culture, you know, Taylor Swift or some other giant in entertainment, some big actor or actress. But I have met a lot of these people, and no knocking on them, but I'm not particularly interested in interviewing any of them. So I really thought, what is the most honest answer I can give? And here it is. I would like to interview anyone who drives slowly in the carpool lane. I'm not kidding. I know it sounds bizarre, but I'm dead serious. The thing I say, my wife is a living witness to this. When I am behind a slow driver in what we call the diamond lane, you know, the lane where if you have a passenger, so there are more than two of you, you have access to that lane. Other cars don't. And when someone is driving slowly in that lane and all the regular lanes are going faster, I will say to my wife, I really want to interview this person. What is in their mind? That makes sense?
It's a great question.
It is a great question.
I thought that today.
Yes. You see, here's the point. If I interviewed the Pope, that would interest me. I know what he will say to almost any question that I'll ask, which is no insult to the Pope. I know how he thinks. I read him. The same would hold true for the President of the United States or for any given senator. I would know in 99% of the cases what they would say. I don't know what they would say. When I would say, you realize there is no point in your being in that lane if you're going slowly. All you're doing is holding back a dozen drivers behind you. Are you not aware of that? And I want to know, are they aware? Same with, by the way, the same with left lane. The passing lane. You know, you're going more slowly in the left lane than anybody else on the road. Are you not aware of that? So that's who I want to interview. So you should write in to me. If you drive slowly in the high occupancy vehicle lane, as some states call it, diamond lane, as others call it, what is the most famous carpool lane, whatever it is, I'd like to interview you. You see, I am stunned. I shouldn't be, because I don't have a high opinion of human nature. But I'm still stunned at the utter lack of awareness that is taking place there. Are you not aware of the fact that everybody else is going faster than you? Okay. Anyway, that's my answer, Joshua. And I'm sure I disappointed you. You expected some really fascinating answer. Well, it is a fascinating answer. I will admit that. It's not dramatic or it's not. Okay. All right. Here we go. To your questions. What's our time, by the way?
19.
Okay. We have time. We have a lot of time. I could have done another subject, but I won't because we get subjects from the questions. Blake in Belmont, Michigan, USA, 39. Hi, Dennis. I first got introduced to you through the Exodus discussion with Jordan Peterson. Reminds me to just tell you a few things. So I was one of the participants with Jordan Peterson on the study of the biblical book of Exodus. I think there were seven of us. And it has millions of views. And I really enjoyed the people I was with. So That's at the Daily Wire. It's a free plug for Daily Wire. And I will be returning this year to study, in this case, a New Testament text, or New Testament texts, namely the four Gospels. So that'll be fascinating for me. I will be one of the few Jews on the panel, and I'm sure it will be of interest to others too. Okay, anyway. It was clear from the beginning that you valued wisdom. That's right. Many people today value knowledge, but not wisdom. That's right. I am dumbfounded by the absolute disregard for the past. Now, I have a comment on that. Don't assume, by your comment, I'm not sure what you mean. Do you mean that they were wiser in the past? Or by our neglecting the study of the past, we don't get wisdom? There are two possibilities. I don't know how much they were wiser in the past, though I do believe that there was more value placed on wisdom, certainly in America, 100 years ago than today. As regards the other possible read, I agree totally. The disregarding the past means you cannot have wisdom. That's correct. If you don't know what happened, then you can't understand life. Okay, anyway. For some reason, we think we are so much smarter than everyone from the past several thousand years. I find it completely ignorant to think that we could be so smart, but our origin so stupid. That's a good way of putting it. That's correct. Yes, a lot of people think they're smarter than everybody who lived before them. That is correct. Yeah. I mean, people who lived in the past believed that the ideal family is the nuclear family, a husband, a wife, and children. They must have been stupid or bigoted to believe that. That's what you're taught at college. To counteract my 5-year-old and 7-year-old being taught rubbish at school, I started watching your fireside chat with my kids in the room. Isn't that cool? With his 5- and 7-year-olds? They do pick up on some of your wisdom. First, will you say hi to my 5- and 7-year-olds, Waverly and William? No, I won't. It's just a joke. Thought I would engage in dark humor because Nathan has not laughed once this entire bloody fireside chat. I find that annoying. And so I just decided to really be goofy on this one. Hello, Waverly and Willem, or Willem. It's W-I-L-L-E-M. That's a new one on me. That will help them. Hi, guys. That will help them be more interested in what wisdom you have to share. Also, what ways would you suggest that I instill wisdom in my children? Thank you for your time and care. It's not hard. Teach them wise sayings about life. Teach them wise stories. I mean, that's what fairy tales were about, for example. If you read them Pinocchio, it teaches them about lying, that there's wisdom in that. A lot of these books have wisdom. Books are the greatest vehicle. They're generally a better vehicle than movies, though some movies can teach wisdom. Generally speaking, certainly in American history, the Bible has been the vehicle for teaching wisdom. That's largely how I learned it. I mean, I learned one of the most important keys to wisdom. People are not basically good, from the Bible. God declares that in the 8th chapter of the first book, Genesis. I don't see how you can be wise if you believe human nature is basically good. You can't build a wise structure on a faulty foundation. By the way, I never said people are basically bad. I just said they're not basically good, just for the record. But that's really important. I was going to talk about that as my way of dealing with a lot of bad news, which I still will do. It's, and I'll even I'll even tell you now in a few sentences. When you understand that human nature is not basically good, instead of being disappointed in people constantly, you are pleasantly surprised by good people constantly. For another time, but that's a really big part of my ability to deal with bad news. So the Bible has generally been the greatest vehicle, and it should continue to be. Even if you're not a believer, just use it. That's use the fireside chat. There are quite a number now of people filling the massive chasm that exists in our educational institutions, which don't any longer teach wisdom. It was the goal of education to teach truth, beauty, and goodness. And neither of those three is any longer a big goal. All right, Jakub, 23, in the Czech Republic. Hello, Mr. Prager. I am a big fan, and you are an intellectual role model of mine. My question for you is, how can one become a real man where we are bombarded by loneliness, depression, pornography in the world of modern feminism and red pill movement? All right, Jakub, so it sounds like this is obviously about you, and I'm sorry, but it doesn't matter, even if you're just asking it in the abstract. How can one become a real man when we are bombarded by loneliness, depression, pornography in the world of modern feminism and red pill movement? So I asked the definition of the red pill movement, and Megan explained it to me earlier. So that's sort of like the male version of feminism, right? It's feminism has a big anti-male aspect to it, the movement, not the theory. And likewise, the red pill movement has a big anti-female element, right? Yeah, so which is a reaction in large measure to, oh, the patriarchy, toxic masculinity, and all these attacks on men. From the very beginning, I've said that feminism was much more anti-male than it's pro-female. And I turned out to be right, because they don't defend women, as, for example, with regard to female sports, when biological men compete. The feminist movement has been silent. So how do you become a real man in light of all of that? It's a sad question. I was raised to be a man. I mean, that was the whole point of being raised. In fact, I was actually told, and so were many, many boys of my generation, be a man. Parents stopped saying that, starting with the 70s or whatever. And no, almost no parent says that today. Be a man. It would be obvious to anyone who heard it that the person would be deemed a conservative and perhaps even sexist. Oh, be a man. Oh, well. And transphobic. All the bad terms. How do you become a man if you weren't raised to be a man? That's really the question, because I do believe if you're raised to be a man, you will be one. I don't take much credit. I am a man. I will say I'm a masculine man. But I don't take all that much credit for it, because that's how I was raised. And my father was a model of a masculine man. It's very hard for boys to grow up without a male model to show them what it is to be a man. This is why we have such a tragedy in the what we call in America the inner city, which is largely blacks and Hispanics, but especially blacks, who in 80% of the cases don't come from a married mother and father and frequently just don't have a father in their life. How are you going to become a man? So often their manliness is expressed in gang warfare, in violence. When being a male is not taught to you and you don't have models of good men, then you will have models of bad men. And that's an issue. And even worse, many boys grow up now without a father on earth or a father in heaven. They don't have either model. So I don't believe it's too late for a young man. And if they want to use people like Jordan or myself, and there are many others without question, that's good. To be a man, I'll take the Jewish formula, which I think is terrific. When a boy or a girl, for that matter, is born in Jewish life, this is what is wished. May you grow up, and every traditional, now most Jews are not religious, so a lot of Jews don't know this, but all religious Jews know this. There's a wish for three things when a boy or a girl is born. May you grow up for, in Hebrew, it's Torah, Chupa, Umaasim Tovim. For Torah, that is biblical study and observance. Chupa, the wedding canopy, get married. And Maasim Tovim, good deeds. Frankly, I think that's the greatest trio to make you a good person, man or woman, that I've ever heard. Grow up with biblical wisdom and observing its moral laws, and get married and do good deeds. Then you'll be a man. By the way, in general, marriage makes men men. It's hard to be a man. I mean, you can. There are single men who obviously are certainly good men. There's no question about that. But nothing quite does it like marriage. That is so true that big part of our problem, the men you describe here, loneliness, depression, pornography, those are three symbols of single men. I mean, that's, you could be lonely, you could be depressed, and you could engage in pornography as a married man. I totally acknowledge that. But overwhelmingly, marriage helps in all three categories. The effect on women except for the pornography part, the loneliness and depression is even more obvious. We have more depressed young women than at any time since recording has begun of women's depression rates. That the price paid for this nonsense, which the feminists developed, I got to admit, then the men went along of not getting married or getting married so much later in life that you stay a boy. I remember, I've been on radio for 40 years. I remember my first years of radio, a guy calling me, and remember, I was in my 30s, so people calling me were in their 30s very often. Guy in his 30s calls me, he's, Dennis, I want your advice. When I go out on a date, I don't know whether I should hold the door open for the woman I'm going on a date with, because there was one date, she said to me, what's the matter? You don't think I could hold the door for myself? And I remember I said something to the guy. Listen, first of all, you should have thanked that woman for saving you money on a meal. As soon as she said that, you should have said, listen, given that's how you feel, I think I'm wasting your time and you're wasting my time. It's obvious that our relationship isn't going to go anywhere. If you think it's objectionable for a man to hold a door for a woman, I'm not your guy. That would have been a masculine thing to do. That's not toxic. That's strong. That's good. You hold the door, I told him. The fact that you're even debating it is not masculine. You hold the door for a woman. End of issue. If she resents it, fine. You don't need her in your life. But you do it. One element, I should really cover this. I really haven't. What is masculinity? I don't think I've done. Really? Take a look. While. Yeah. But I'll tell you one big aspect of masculinity. You do what is right and you're okay with being disliked for it. Wanting to be loved and popular is not masculine. How's that? Make sense? Oh, woman of the group? Yeah, she is the one woman in the group. What do you think of that? Well, that was important. I wish you well. Hope you get married. Okay. Got a lot on my mind, obviously. See you next week. I'm Dennis Prager. Thank you for watching and listening.
Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.